What we're talking about this week is, sort of one of these expressions of the things we've been learning. It's been really good to hear about how people have been thinking about their minds, or noticing their mind, noticing their thoughts, and starting to realise the consequences that that has for them. That I just want to rejoice in you for that. That is really good. That's exactly what we've been trying to do on this course. So yeah, a big well done for that. Just keep going. Don't worry about all the rest of it. Just keep going with that awareness, and you'll be fine. As we're probably starting to realise now, the mind is quite a powerful thing. Can even be quite dangerous. You know, it has a consequence for us, but it also, as I said a bit last week, it also, you know, all the sort of worst things that have happened in human society started off as somebody's thought. So if we're not careful, they can control us, and they can have really, really negative effects in the world. You know, they can compel us to act in really inhuman ways, particularly if they're fueled by hatred and or greed. You know, that can start having a really negative effect on our world and people around us. So given that these things can arise, we're not powerless. We can actually protect against the negative aspects of the mind by cultivating the positive. So, you know, being receptive, you know, fostering connectedness, reacting creatively. We talked about this last week, like noticing those chitters and choosing to act in a way which is more in accordance with the people we want to be. Yeah, trying to make a good response. So remembering that certain patterns of behaviour or certain thoughts do not work. You know, hatred does not dispel hatred. It just perpetuates it. So you have to, choose to act in a different way in order to get anywhere. Creating positive aspects to our mind day to day can protect us against falling into these negative ones in the first place. So it's worth thinking about, like our mind is the sort of product of all the things we expose it to. So a good metaphor to think about is like the diet. So whatever we feed our mind is the sort of nature of it. So everything that you expose your mind to, whether you do it consciously or not, has an effect. So we know that your brain is made up of all these pathways, of all these, you've got about a billion neurons in your brain, and they've got, millions, like 30 billion connections with each other. And everything you expose your mind to, everything you take in through your sense apparatus, alters that all those pathways to some degree. So it creates new connections, it prunes away other ones, it strengthens some connections, it weakens some connections. So, you know, every TV program you watch, every bit of advertising you're exposed to, every thought, every
customer in the shop,
conversation you have, every single thing causes an effect in your mind, in your brain, in your neural connections. So if we spend our evenings like gunning down virtual bad guys on Call of Duty, or watching trashy like bitchy soap operas or something, then that's not just a harmless bit of fun. That does actually have an effect. And you know, if you while you're engaging in that activity, the pathways that you've got, which are the ones which are conducive to kindness and generosity, are not being exercised. They're not being used, and anything that's not being used in the brain gets trimmed away. Yeah, anything. The brain is a remarkable machine that is evolved for efficiency. So if you don't, just like a muscle, if you don't use it, it gets trimmed away. It's not worth sustaining. So if we don't exercise these positive pathways, and we only give ourselves a diet of things which encourage negative pathways, then that is what we will become. Yeah, that is what we'll become. So if we're trying to change our minds, then we need to look at what we're feeding it. you know, if we only watch violent movies, and I know it's fine if you want to watch the odd horror movie, but if that's the only thing you watch, then it's going to affect how you respond to the world. Yeah, you're going to start to see the world in a more threatening way. You're going to, you know, respond to situations out of a pattern of aggression, or at least irritation or reactivity, simply because that's what you've primed your mind to respond to. So bear in mind, our minds cannot tell the difference between fantasy and reality. Yeah, so when you're, the reason why these films are exciting is because it's actually, for your mind, it's actually as if it's really happening. So it causes that same propagation of hormones, of electrical impulses, and so on. So, on the basis of how we've developed our minds, certain chitters will arrive, certain thoughts, and that affects how we relate to the world. It can be the difference between responding reactively or responding patiently to situations and challenges. If we leave our mind to its own devices, it will, it tends to like junk food. So it likes, X Factor, the Daily Mail, trashy TV series, rom-coms and so on. This stuff is all really popular in our society because it matches our mind sort of common state, yeah? It likes to compare, it likes to be a bit bitchy, it likes to be critical, it likes to, be a bit graspy, it likes to indulge unrealistic fantasies and ego trips, yeah? It's so easy for the mind to go down that pathway. And it's also addictive. Yeah, anyone who's watched a whole series of something on Netflix in one night knows that how addictive that can be. The good thing is that Buddhism, one of the main teachings of Buddhism is that it's called conditioned co-production. It's basically cause and effect. So if you do one thing, something will arise. If you do another thing, something else will arise. So if we feed our mind better, then you'll notice better baseline mental states. Yeah. So this basically means we've been working on identifying when we've got negative mental states arise. But if we just feed our mind better to start with, then less of these negative mental states will arrive, and we can just cultivate the positive ones. Yeah? You'll have to work less hard on dealing with the negative ones. And what we're trying to do is sort of point our minds in a more and more positive direction over time. So we've all got that thing that we indulge, that compulsion that we just sort of let our minds do, I have a bit of a habit of staying up late. I'm not very good at going to bed on time. And often I'll be watching TV or reading or whatever. And it just, time just slips away from me. And it has a really bad effect on me, actually. And it's just this sort of, this terrible little habit that I indulge because I want a bit of me time or something at the end of the evenings. But I really know it's not very good for me, actually. I really, really know that. And I wish I could do something about it. I mean, I do something about it, but it's just a... So we've all got one of those, haven't we? Or probably more than one. We know what our compulsion is, whether that's, TV, video games, pornography, 50 Shades of Grey, whatever, I don't know what your particular indulgence is. And that's not going to go away overnight, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to manage those indulgences, and we're trying to steer our minds towards something a bit more creative, a bit more useful to us. Or at least in the short term, we can compensate. So it's a bit like having a green salad with your burger or something, like you can at least try and eat a bit healthily alongside your normal diet, if you see what I mean. It's much better to put your energy in terms of looking for more positive things than trying to deny the negative. Because if you just deny the negative, you'll just get snapped back. You just won't be able to sustain it, and then you'll binge on whatever that thing is, whatever your indulgence is. So much, much better to use your energy to look for more positive, more enriching experiences. So how we do this is we cultivate receptivity. So to do that, we first need to create a space in our mind to do that. And we do that by you've already been doing that. You've been doing that by looking at your chitters, looking at your thoughts, looking at your feelings, looking at what's going on. And this also means owning up to what's ours, taking responsibility for our own mental state. So never mind what that other person did, you know, what are we doing? What is our mind doing with that? Yeah. In some ways, we can't change others. We can only change ourselves. So taking responsibility for that. And once we've done that, that creates a bit of space, which means we can be a bit more open to other things around us. We can be open to beauty, we can be open to wonder, we can be open to enriching experiences. You know, such as being in, you know, such as the experiences you can have in nature, or when you're really engaged in a good bit of art. In some ways, this is the primary quality we're trying to develop with mindfulness, this receptivity. So this can take you all the way up to enlightenment, up to a really, you know, a really rather refined state of consciousness. If you can just be receptive to how things actually really are, and the beauty of that to some degree. So yeah, a really easy way to do this is nature. Yeah, it's all around us, and we're actually, as a people, we're quite alienated from it. So it's all there. This is, in some ways, it's really simple, but we find this really hard in the city. We just forget it. We forget it's out there. But as soon as we take ourselves out, it can, you know, you can just feel better, don't you? Like, you know, as soon as you leave your house, as soon as you come into the park, you just breathe, and suddenly you feel completely different, don't you? Much, much better. You know, I don't know if you noticed today, it was really bright and lovely, wasn't it? You know, I sort of I got out of the house, got on the bus, and I normally just do emails on the bus because partly it's a way of being efficient. Suddenly, I just realised how like lovely it was, and like, I had to put my phone away because otherwise I'd sort of miss it. I wouldn't sort of it would have been easy for me just to sort of not be receptive to that experience, just to carry on with what I was doing. So it's all around us, yeah? And we just go for, as soon as we go for a walk, we can just notice the sunlight, or notice the plants, the spring plants starting to arise. All sorts of things around us. There's a cute squirrel around today, which I was enjoying. But you need to allow a bit of space for it. So it means doing it undistractedly. So not getting on your gadgets, not listening to music. If you've got a friend with you, just telling them to be quiet for a bit, you know, just trying to really appreciate it. And you can just be in it. You don't really need to do much more. What we're trying to do is sort of, in some ways, cultivate a bit of our sort of pagan roots to some degree. So, you know, there's a... Before sort of Christianity came along, there was a lot of there was a sort of real animalistic approach to nature. You know, people really felt part of it. You know, everything sort of felt alive. And in some ways, there's a lot of similarities between Buddhism and paganism. We're looking for that sort of sense of aliveness that, you know, I'm not just talking about the sort of the birds and the ants and so on, but I'm also talking about like the trees and the rocks and the things, you know, the fact that there's a whole sort of ecosystem here, and that we are part of that, you know, we're not sort of separate from that, and that there's a sort of aliveness in everything to some degree. So you're trying to sort of cultivate that, even a sort of consciousness in things. If you can sort of start to, try to tune in to that sort of consciousness around. And if you've ever had a sort of deeper experience of meditation, you may have a sense of this. Like, the deeper you go in meditation, the more that aliveness in the world seems to come out. It can be really striking sometimes. You know, suddenly everything feels alive, whereas before it all felt quite sort of artificial and manufactured. You know, even things like buildings and so on. If you start thinking of them as a process, then there is a sort of, we think of them as permanent, don't we? But of course they're a process that lives and dies, much like everything else. So you can just sit in nature, really. You can just let it come to you. And actually, literally, that happens, doesn't it? If you sit really quietly somewhere, if you take yourself off into the woods and just sit and don't move, then it's almost as if nature comes to you. You know, the animals are sort of not scared of you anymore, and they actually come very close, won't they, the birds and the squirrels and so on. And then it can even seem like the sort of trees even just sort of accept you, and you suddenly feel like part of it. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. You know, you suddenly just feel like, oh, I'm allowed to be here or something. You don't feel like an imposter anymore. I had a lovely experience of this actually at Vajrasana, which is the London Buddhist Center's retreat center. And for many years I used to go up there and do quite a lot of help out with gardening. So I planted quite a lot of trees and looked after them, pruned them and so on. And then I was up there one autumn, or like, you know, late summer, and all of the apple trees had fruited. And so I was just walking around the garden picking apple trees and eating them off these trees, you know, the nicest apples ever. And just this real sense of, this tree has given it to me, you know, and this tree has just given me a gift of this apple. It's made it for me. And there's a lovely sort of synchrony in that, like I've come up to look after the trees. So it's all part of this lovely connected world, you know. So anyway, I really love the experience of that. But of course we can, the thing with nature is, one thing you just need to watch out for is that you can sometimes sort of see it but not feel it. You can sort of see the beauty. You can sort of be like, oh yeah, that's sort of, in abstract, you can sort of, oh yeah, that's sort of beautiful, tree, plant, you know, pond, path. That's what a beautiful thing should look like. But you're also trying to get a bit more of a sort of felt sense of that, like a real sort of heart connection with being an organism in this ecosystem that we're in. In some ways you'll notice that most if you can get away for a bit. Like if you can go for a walk, or if you can take yourself off for a weekend, or even better, if you can go on a retreat. Mainly if you can just get away from your laptop, you know, and get away from work, you'll notice that. It's part of that being receptive. You have to sort of create a bit of space for it. So that's one thing you could think about doing, creating a bit of space. However that looks in your life, creating a bit of space to do that. So another possibility, or another way of engaging, is with art. So, you know, all kinds of art, poetry, literature, painting, music, performance, dance, whatever. So art can really be part of that better diet. If you think about the function of art is really to help you deepen your experience. It's to give you an experience that you... Give you more of an experience of something. Yeah, try to give you a sense of what the artist was experiencing. Yeah, it's to try to get you into that space that they were in when they produced that bit of art. So if the art is good and you can be receptive enough to engage with it, then it can really touch you very profoundly. But it might take a bit of work, actually. I had quite a journey with poetry. I was very judgmental about poetry, actually. I didn't have a particularly good education. I came from a very sort of poor working class family where you didn't really, you know, you hardly had any books in the house, let alone any poetry. Poetry is a very sort of, elevated, sort of ossified art or something. So I was really, really judgmental about it. For sure, I really hated it. And then, of course, many years later, I found myself living with Maitreya Bandi, who's also a poet as well, renowned poet. So obviously, me and him didn't see eye to eye on the value of poetry. And even at some point, he runs these events called Poetry East, where he invites famous poets to come along and he interviews them. And, you know, all these cultural people have a really lovely time. But he was running one of them on our community night. And so the suggestion was our whole community go to this poetry evening. You can imagine how really unhappy I was about that. So I'm sitting at the back, just like thinking, why am I here? And he decides to sort of point me out to everyone. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, there's so-and-so. He doesn't even want to be here. We made him come tonight. So he doesn't like poetry. I created another little obstacle. I lived in that community for 5 years, and over the course of that, I softened. I was open enough to look at my own responses to that form of art, and start to ask why I didn't like it, what it is that people respond to, why do they get it, and why do what's in it. And then 1 year I found on my birthday that I was, I decided to ask Mike Shabani for a poetry book, which he got me. It's actually this book. He got me this book, which I then took with me on Solitary with me. So this is a really lovely little anthology from a bigger anthology. And I was on my own in this big stone cottage with this log burner, sitting there huddled under blankets, and just had nothing else to do. I was just reading these poems, and I read the entire book, and over the course of the week, and I was so, like, at some of them I was moved to tears. I was so moved to them, and suddenly just sort of like opened up a world which I had never experienced before. You know, I opened up something deeper in me. So at its best, art can touch you and transport you into a different world. Not all art is equal, obviously, but if you can be receptive, if you can find good art and you can be receptive to it, then it can really transform you, transform your mental states. You can cultivate those, we're talking about the diet, it really can be a good element of that diet. So a good source of food for your mind. So just to say, you do need to start where you're at. Yeah, if you, if you're like me, if I had poetry forced upon me years ago, I really wouldn't have been able to engage with it. It took that long process of me to sort of work up to it. So if you're really into dubstep, you're not going to get into Vivaldi or Bach straight away. You first need to sort of look at where you find pleasure currently. So what do you really enjoy at the moment? And then see if you can sort of elevate it a bit. So see if you can find something that's a little bit more of a challenge. Yeah, a bit richer, a bit of something that you think holds promise, but you've never quite been able to get into it before. So you can hunt around for that. And you're trying to get into the mind of the artist. So what is the artist trying to take you into? So see if you can find that. For instance, if you like movies, maybe you could go to the theatre instead. If you like R&B music, maybe you could listen to a bit of classical, contemporary classical, see how that works. If you like Andy Warhol, maybe you could go see some Turner or something like that. Slightly try and extend your cultural diet a little bit. And it's not necessarily to say that, not necessarily to make judgments about which one is better, but more to try and just enrich your horizons a bit, if you see what I mean. Obviously, don't try and go for stuff that you don't think much of. Try to go for stuff that you you think is a bit richer. Yeah. So that's it, basically. Not going to say too much more. So for home practices, the main thing for this week is meditation. So I'm pleased that most of you have started a meditation practice. If you haven't already started, then it's going to be really helpful for these next few weeks to have some element of that in your week. So yeah, if you're doing a daily practice, great. There are more exercises in the book. So page 215 has lots of exercises that you can go through day by day if you want to. I would recommend them. They're very, very good. But otherwise, if you can't do it every day, just do what you can. You know, just do what you can. Try to aim for a few times a week. If you're really struggling to do anything, 5 minutes a day. Yeah, everybody can find 5 minutes a day. Yeah, just go to bed 5 minutes later or get up 5 minutes earlier. Yeah, it's not a big deal. Yeah, and even 5 minutes a day would make a difference. But obviously, if the ideal is more like 20 minutes or so. If you can do 20 minutes a day, you're doing really, really well. Yep. So think about how you can keep your meditation practice going, and again try to just identify any things that get in the way of that. You constantly have to be on the lookout for obstacles and things which can derail that, so you're just trying to find a solution to those, and also remind yourself why you're meditating. Yeah, what are the benefits of that? So the two other things are awareness of nature. So you could, if you're doing a mindful walk, you can continue doing that, but just with more awareness of nature or whatever other mindful activity you're doing. You could cycle, you could just go and sit in the park, you could have your lunch in the park. Whatever is fine, just try and expose yourself to a bit more nature. Don't use your devices, and if you take a friend along, just tell them what you're doing and have a little mindful period where you can just be quiet together. And all you need to do is just be a bit patient, really. You just need to sit and be aware of your body, any Vedana that arises, any thoughts that are going on in your mind, any feelings, noticing your surroundings, and just seeing what unfolds. Yeah, just being really open to having a new experience, whatever that is. Like maybe you notice something, maybe you suddenly become aware of the light or something like that. And again, if you can get away, if you can make a bit more space for yourself and get away for the weekend or go for a long walk or even book yourself a retreat, then that's even better. Yeah, if you can think about doing that. And then just finally, see if you can improve your cultural diet. Maybe go to a gallery, maybe choose. Maybe put that trashy novel away and read something a little bit richer. That's in some ways it's completely up to you what you want to do, but just try and do that. What I've got for you is I'm going to give you some poems to take home with you. So these are I didn't actually select these. These are selected by Maitri Bandi, which he gave me to give to you. So poems need to be reread, yeah? So don't just read them once. If you're going to read them, read them a few times during the week and actually just see if you can notice how your experience changes. You don't have to read these ones. You can choose other ones. If poetry is not your thing, that's fine. You know, pick something else. But yeah, if you do want to read those, that's a good... if you want an easy way of doing that, then I'll give you some poems, basically. So that's about it, really. That's about it. I might just finish with another little personal anecdote. Is that unusually, I'm actually really fond of ballet. I rather discovered this quite by accident. Partly just through something like this, I decided to take a risk and expose myself to something different. Partly, I must admit, as a excuse to impress women or to take women out on dates. But what I discovered is that I actually enjoyed the ballet a lot more than them. And as time's gone on, I find I'm really, really into it. In some ways, I never would have thought that, you know, growing up as a sort of, you know, a working class lad from Dorset, you know, really by all sort of accounts, I shouldn't be into these sorts of things, but there we are. Yeah, so it seems to me all you need to do is just be open. You know, there are probably things out there that you would really enjoy, you just don't know it yet. So this is an opportunity to explore that. You know, see if you can find a new interest, a new love, as it were. Okay, so that's all.
Can cooking be seen as an art?
I certainly treat it as an art. I mean, I think there are certain forms of cooking which seem to predispose themselves to an artistic form more. So I'm thinking like Japanese cooking or, really high-end. Yeah, up to you. But I think probably, yeah. Yeah. But what you're looking for in that is a richness of experience. In some ways, that's what you're looking for, that richness, if you see what I mean. Like, an appreciation of the aesthetics of it, the plate, the colours, the shapes, you know, the beauty of the object and the contemplation of the processes that have gone into it. You know, where all the ingredients come from, all the care that's been put into the ingredients, your care of creating it. Do you see the sort of all the different levels that you could entertain in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.